Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 14 of Connecting with CAN, a podcast dedicated to sharing Kuwait Aid Network's experience on working with migrant workers. I'm your host, Caleb Sanders. On today's podcast, we have Mariam, and we will be talking about gender discrimination. So we all know that gender discrimination is a huge world issue. But because gender discrimination can include a broad range of issues, what is your summarized definition of gender discrimination?
Hi, Caleb. Thanks for the introduction. I think gender discrimination can be, you know, it can be something that can be very subtle, or it can be something that can be very, you know, explicit and direct. And, you know, in general, I think the definition of that I would classify it as is, you know, being treated unequally, or, being having disadvantages to specific things because of your gender. So whether that's, you know, whether that's not being able to access certain things, whether that means being excluded from applying for certain jobs because of your gender, or, you know, being harassed at the workplace or in you know, within civil society. You know, I think it includes also things like having derogatory language hurled at you because you're a woman, or, you know, the treatment that would be considered not very nice. And I think this kind of can apply to, like I said, either the workplace or, you know, in a person's day-to-day life. You know, I think especially in Kuwait, it's something that is, I wouldn't say it comes in many, many different ways. It comes within the law. Actually, there's many things that restrict women's access to specific things. For example, as a Kuwaiti woman, I can't pass on my nationality to my own kids while the man can. Or, for example, I can't register my children in school. The father has to do it. I can't, when giving birth, I can't even sign off on medical things. The man has to do it. And so there's many things that actually restrict women's access to things or their ability to make decisions. And, you know, that's specifically for Kuwaiti women. When it comes to migrant women, it's even worse because there's things that are even more extreme in their cases because of their lack of access to things in general, because of their vulnerability. You know, they have to pay specific fees that I don't pay, for example, and they, you know, they're subject to even more harassment in some cases. And I think that it's something that is very, you know, women have in Kuwait, we only got the right to vote very recently. Like, it's been very kind of delayed, as opposed to the rest of the world. You know, I think it was in 2006 that women were able to vote in parliament, like for their MPs, which, if you think about it, it's quite, like, you know, it's a good example of how, you know, gender discrimination works in the country. And there's still many things that kind of affect women's rights in Kuwait. Yeah, so there's many ways that women in Kuwait don't have equal rights. And, you know, that's not necessarily included in the constitution itself. It's something within the practices of the country. And, you know, women have been protesting this for many years. Migrant women don't have the ability to protect some of these things. And so, you know, I think that it's something that is incredibly rampant in Kuwait and in society here. And, you know, there's no one specific way to classify it. It comes in many different forms.
Right. So, yeah, it really sounds like even on top of the normal struggles of being a migrant worker in Kuwait, being a woman really just adds on to that and makes it a lot more difficult. Okay, so how do you see gender discrimination impacting the lives of migrant workers specifically?
Well, I think in the case of migrant women, they're very vulnerable because most of the job positions they have here, you know, they're either domestic workers, so working as maids within homes, which makes them extremely vulnerable to things like sexual harassment in the workplace, things like, you know, exploitation, things like, you know, things that their male counterparts wouldn't have to go through. And also, you know, because of the lack of access to, for example, things like public transport, like good public transportation, you know, migrant women have to make, they have to make specific journeys that might be, you know, difficult for them to make. And, you know, also they could be subject to sexual harassment. They could be subject to, you know, many things on those journeys. And I think that they, you know, another thing also is some migrant women are sought out as partners for, you know, for Kuwaiti men or military men. You know what? No, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't know why Jeff put that in. Anyways, we can skip that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think you should jump to the next question now.
Okay. So is sexual harassment in the workplace common among migrant workers, either men or women? And could you give some examples?
Yeah. I think sexual harassment in the workplace, it is common. It depends what the workplace is. It depends on the level of vulnerability of the migrant worker. Because, for example, it could happen to any woman, really. And this is something that can happen, you know, anywhere. But I think, you know, especially like we were talking about the case of a domestic worker, for example, you know, there's been many, many cases of domestic workers here in Kuwait subject to sexual harassment. And, you know, there's been multiple stories that have come out actually in the last, you know, 2 years alone that are quite scary and that have to do with, you know, issues relating specifically to that. And, you know, there's no actual protection for these women. You know, there's no lobbying for these women. There's nobody advocating for them to receive actual justice. And when these cases do happen, you know, there's a little bit of a conversation on, for example, social media, but there isn't penalization. There isn't heavy, you know, nobody's basically monitoring what's happening. Nobody is, you know, there isn't a system that protects these people. It's the complete opposite. The system actually works against them. And so, you know, it's something that is very challenging, I would say, you know, for women in those positions, because they actually don't have any power in that position. And, you know, in their situation, because of the sponsorship system, it makes it incredibly difficult for them to advocate, you know, or to, you know, notify people of what's going on. And then the case of, you know, in other cases for sexual harassment, you know, there have been some cases in ministries, there have been some cases, you know, in some government facilities. And generally, women aren't really believed when it comes to this stuff, which isn't a shocker because this is how it is around the world. But, you know, but it's very difficult for women to get away from some of this stuff because of the systems that that allow this stuff to happen. And usually when women do go to, you know, police stations or when they go to, you know, to law enforcement, they're told to, you know, they're redirected and they're told to kind of like tone it down so that they don't harm the man's reputation. And, you know, they're told that if they go through with some of these complaints, that there will be issues for them and that, you know, this would bring dishonor on their families, that this would bring, you know, all kinds of different things. And the woman is essentially shamed into being quiet. And, you know, and also this is a very much there's very different elements that come into it. And an element that comes into it is class, for example. So if you're from a specific family or tribe that is very protective of a woman's reputation, it can be incredibly challenging. Like the woman is, you know, the odds are even like, you know, more against her. So, you know, there's so many stories that can be spoken about this particular topic. And I think if, you know, if we look at, like I said, even the last like 2 or 3 years alone, there's been so many examples of these issues.
Right. That's horrible. And yeah, that sounds like that pressure for women to keep that good reputation, that's a very difficult thing to deal with. And I can't imagine with already the trauma of sexual harassment and the emotions around that, then being told to suppress those by even your family members and people that you think are there to support you, that would be very difficult. Is there anything migrant workers can do to protect themselves from gender discrimination? And if so, what would that look like?
I mean, I think that's a difficult question because, you know, some of the systems that exist really embolden some of these issues. And when it comes to, you know, something like gender discrimination, I think, you know, I think women from the moment they're born, they're having to protect themselves. They're having to do, you know, they're taught this by their mothers. They're taught this by, you know, the women around them. And, you know, especially in societies that are tribal or that are, you know, that are very kind of sexist. And I think, you know, in Kuwait, when there's so much focus on, for example, you know, nationals and what can be done to protect nationals, the conversation about migrant workers is often left out. And, you know, it's very much a us versus them situation. And so the things that might be already there to protect, for example, Kuwaiti women might not be available for non-Kuwaiti women. And so, you know, the thing that migrant workers can do to protect themselves from gender discrimination is to, you know, that would be a difficult thing for me to say because I'm a Kuwaiti woman. And so me advocating for myself is a whole other different thing than them advocating for themselves, because they're not allowed to do that fully within the law for fear of deportation, for fear of, you know, penalization, for many things, you know, that put them in that specific box. And so they themselves can, you know, can only do what they can do. And I think the focus should be on what, you know, what the other part of society can do to protect them. So, you know, like myself as a Kuwaiti woman, I can advocate on their behalf. I can, you know, let people know. I can talk about these issues publicly about, you know, how these issues affect them more than they do us. And that's something that, you know, on my side, that's the only thing that I can kind of do. I think, you know, obviously there's going to be some societies that, you know, exist within migrant communities that can, you know, help them more than, you know, what we can say. So I would suggest, you know, people kind of refer to their communities and they refer to the information that they have, you know, with their colleagues, with people similar to them who might have gone through specific issues relating to this topic and, you know, go from there.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Advocating for them seems like the best course of action for now. And also, they have voices, and just kind of putting those voices on speakers, I think. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Well, I think that just about wraps it up for today. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Connecting with Can, and we hope you're having a wonderful day. We'll see you next week. Stay connected.